Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
This is George Barna, and you're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Jim Veldheis, filling in for Roger Marsh. Joining Dr. Dobson in the studio today is his good friend, George Barna. These two are going to have an eye-opening conversation as they look at attitudes of Americans towards a variety of moral issues. There's a lot to cover, so let's get into their interview right now.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson, and with us in the studio today is a colleague and a friend whom I respect highly. He's a social researcher whom most of our listeners will know. You'll at least know his name and the work that he does. He's George Barna, who founded the Barna Group, which is a research forum that gathers data on the spiritual and moral transformation of America. Barna is now the executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute, which seeks to understand and identify the activity of conservative Christians throughout the nation. The New York Times has referred to Barna as the most quoted person in the Christian church today. And I believe that to be true. Almost every statistic or hypothesis that you hear or read about Christian trends in America today seems to have emanated from George Barna in his research. George, you just gave a speech in Cleveland that caught my attention, and I'm so glad you came by to tell us about it. You're on your way to California?
Back to California.
And you stopped in Denver and came down to see us today.
Yeah.
And that's friendship. Thanks for doing that.
I'm glad you were in town. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Because in the speech you just gave, I don't want to embarrass you, but you got a standing ovation. People usually don't give standing ovations to data and findings. That's not what moves the needle, as they say.
You know, it occurred to me maybe they did that because they realized I was finally done. You know,
well, I doubt that. Your analysis comes down to this. Now, everybody listen, pay attention now, because this is kind of a summary. America is changing its social values, especially as the younger generation, the millennials, began to take their place in our culture. Is that an accurate summation of what you have confirmed?
It is. I mean, we've been tracking this for a number of years. And one of the things that's always astonished me about people's views on abortion is that they're so fluid. This is one of those things where, look, either you're killing a child or you're not.
Yeah.
How can your opinions keep moving back and forth? Which tells us how much people have failed to think deeply about this issue, to come
but
to grips
with
what's
happening.
It's
not just abortion. It's the Christian worldview versus a secular worldview. It's many things.
Yeah.
It encompasses the entire culture, really.
Yeah.
And what's happening there, frankly, is deeply disturbing to me.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, this discussion could cover the waterfront of a lot of different issues where we see this same thing happening, where what's going on is that Americans, by and large, have moved away from any kind of a biblical worldview to more of a postmodern, secular humanist, existentialist worldview. And frankly, in all the research we do on worldview, we find nobody has a pure worldview. We pick and choose things that make us feel good, and we throw it together and call it something. But the reality is very few people, by our reckoning, only 10% of adults in America have a biblical worldview. And as you look at that generationally, that's where it gets frightening. Because you look at the builder generation, your generation, 17%. The boomer generation, my generation, 15% have a biblical worldview. You look at the Buster or Gen X generation, it's cut in half down to 7%. And then you look at the millennials, the new generation of young adults who are going to be taking over positions of leadership and influence in our culture, 4% have a biblical
George,
worldview.
George, that's terrible, because those people are going to be in charge. You and I, both generations, are going to be out of here before too long.
Yeah.
And the positions that we have held, the things that we believe, the churches that we've supported, the Bible that we read and believe, is going to be less significant. And what comes in is a generation of kids who, for the most part, are not learning the things that matter most. Many of them are not in church. Many of them do not have the influence of a pastor. And even if they do, the pastor may not be real clear on what his worldview is, too. So when we're gone, what does the future hold for this great country?
It's not a pretty picture. I mean, think of it this way. As we've studied what influences the way that people think and therefore what they believe, and that matters because you do what you believe. Doesn't matter what you say you believe, but the things that you actually do prove what you believe.
It influences behavior.
Absolutely. And so when we look at that and try to figure out what influences those thoughts, we find there are three primary things. It's the media, it's family, and it's government. And as we look at government, we find—
You don't put church in that list?
We study it. I mean, we looked at more than 60 different major influences on people's lives. And we found that things wound up in three different categories of influence. You had the upper tier, the great influencers, which I was just identifying. There are five different types of media in particular, families and government. Those seven entities together have roughly 60 to 70% of the influence on what Americans think. Then there's a middle echelon of influence, a middle tier of influence entities, things like schools and peers and things of that nature. There are about 12 of those entities that cumulatively have 20 to 30% of the influence. And then you've got the bottom tier. There's like 40, 45 or so different entities of influence. Sadly, Christian churches are in that bottom echelon where when you look at those three or four dozen entities together, they only have 10% of the influence. So local churches right now in America are having, and I hate to say it, but almost negligible influence on the critical decision-making ideas that people are developing in their lives. It's really coming mostly from government, family, and media. And so when we look at those things and we look to the future of the country, what do we see? We see people not taking government very seriously because they have this mistaken notion you can't legislate morality.
This is one of the dumber statements
it's unbelievable.
Ever.
Who came up with that? I mean, let's shot.
How about murder?
Yeah.
Can you
legislate
against murder?
I mean, if you think about law, I mean, I used to work for congressmen and in state legislatures and whatnot. What we did all day long was decide America's morality. Because what you do is you make laws which identify what's good or bad, what's right or wrong. If it's wrong, you're punished. If it's good, you can keep doing it. So don't tell me you can't legislate morality. That's all the law is. It's the codification of our nation's morals. And then we have the elements of the state backing that up to police it. So you've got that. We're dismissing that as having much influence on us. We know that the media are biased. And yet we continue to devote hours and hours every day to ingesting the information they're giving us and the points of view that they're communicating through what they might call entertainment, through what they might call news. But really, there's an agenda to help us think in a particular manner.
Rush Limbaugh said on his program just recently, you don't realize what you're taking in when you watch the cable news all day, every day. Some people do. And he said, let me suggest that you take a week off and you don't watch any news, not at Fox News, nothing else for 1 week and see how it changes your attitude. Because we're depressed.
Yeah.
I mean, all that we hear is negative and bad news and people who are cheating and lying and government that's corrupt. and all of that. Yeah. I don't know if I could wean myself off of it, but I'm going to try and see if it works.
You know, my wife and I recently took a vacation overseas, and so we were in a country where I didn't understand the language, so I couldn't watch television news and listen to, you know, radio and whatnot. And we did find that as the vacation went on and we had no media input, we were just able to enjoy life, our spirits did brighten. I mean, things looked a whole lot better.
It's true.
It really is. When you have that kind of a media fast, it can really cleanse your system. It's a good thing.
Well, you have some wonderful slides that show what your findings are on a number of issues related to what we've been talking about. And I wish it were possible for us today, and it's not through radio, to share this information. But we can do it online, and we have. You've given us permission to share some of your findings in some of these slides. I want to start with the first one. Well, it's actually the second slide. It is entitled, How Americans Rank the Top Issues Challenging the U.S. Today. Okay, so what do Americans care about? What do they think is most significant? What do they think is worth worrying about? What are the issues that they think about and worry about? And I would like you to share your findings. This is disturbing to me.
Yeah, I mean, the simplest way to put it is the thing that we think and worry about the most is money.
And me.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
My money.
Yeah, my money.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we look at what people say they're concerned about, the issues that their elected leaders need to be paying attention to the most, always number one on the list is economics, improving the economy in one manner or another. So it's about jobs. It's about taxes. It's about bolstering the national economy. It's about keeping prices down. It's about unemployment, all of these types
of things.
How
much I make.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's far and away number one on the list. It usually outpolls the number two issue on the list by at least a 2-to-1 margin, sometimes much more than that.
Boy, Jesus had a lot to say about money, didn't he? And most of it was not good.
Yeah. And I was going to say, what he talked about is not what we think about.
Yes.
You know, there's a big gap between those two. So, again, the Bible, just a great book to go back to and figure out, yeah, what should I be thinking about money? It's okay to think about it, but how should I think about and what should I do with that?
Let's go down the list.
We've got health care, number two on the list. People
that's,
concerned.
That's me.
Yeah, yeah.
And my family.
Of course it is, yeah. And so there's a lot of issues related to that people worry about. Number three is government spending. You know, how much of my money are you going to take? What are you going to do with it? Number four on the list right now, the North Korean threat is a big deal to people. Again, they're scared about their own continued existence.
Yes.
And keep in mind that 7 out of 10 Americans do not know Christ as their Savior. So for them, this is a huge issue, because in threatening their existence, it raises these questions that they've had decades and decades to ponder, but either haven't bothered or haven't gotten to the point of understanding that your life is not your own. You're here for God's purposes, and He made a way for you to live with Him eternally. All you have to do is recognize that you're a sinner and accept Christ. But 7 out of 10 Americans have refused to do that.
See, that raises the ontological questions, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It is. How'd I get here? What does life mean? What am I supposed to do? Is there anything worth really living for or dying for? What are the true values that should govern my life? Is there a God? Is His Son named Jesus? Is what we've been taught in the Scripture valid, or is it baloney? And what happens at the end of this life? Do I live forever? How do I go to heaven? Is there a heaven? Is there a God watching what I do? Is He interested in right and wrong like we're told He is? Is He paying attention here? You know, if you don't have a faith and a biblical worldview, you can't answer any of those questions.
And it makes life frightening from day to day.
Meaningless.
Yeah, because you don't know what's coming. You don't know where you're headed. There's no real purpose. Why bother getting out of bed? I mean, it says to me that people have got to have some inkling somewhere in their mind and heart that there is a God that exists, that made all of this, made us, cares about us. Otherwise, why not commit suicide?
Look at what our kids are being taught in school. You're the result of random, mindless chemistry that somehow evolved and made you into this temporary being that will die and go into the ground. There's nothing significant in that. And in fact, if a child really believes that, he has no worth. No wonder we have low self-esteem problems. There is no value in my living. I don't have anything to do. There's no cause. There's nothing worth giving my life to. That's depressing.
But see, Doctor, what I love about what you're doing right now is you've made a biblical worldview kind of bottom shelf for everybody. It's not top shelf theology stuff. You just put the cookies on the bottom shelf and said, this is what we're talking about when we talk biblical worldview. It's not seminary stuff. It's not highfalutin intellectual stuff. This is the stuff of life. And this is what you need to know to make your life worthwhile and to make the right choices from day to day. Being able to address those questions and know that the scriptures have answers to every single one of those questions that are accessible to you, you can understand, and you can run with them, you know, every single day of your life.
George, I wrote a book some years ago called Life on the Edge, and it was written for those between 16 and 26 years of age. And before we published that book, we did focus groups where we brought people in that were in that age group and asked them, what matters to you and what is on your mind? What do you care about? And what really bothers you? Do you know what the answer was? Life has no meaning. These are kids. These are the next generation. Life has no meaning. Are you kidding me? When I was four, I knew what I believed and what life was and what it was all about and how I was expected to live and that God was watching me and he loved me and cared about me. And because of him, I was going to live someplace in eternity. All that was with me from childhood because it's what the church taught me and I believed it.
But think
they
about
don't
this.
Know that.
I know. I mean, I'm just jumping out of my chair here. It's like I've got numbers to prove this, you know? I mean, we know that right now in America, we've got about 245, 250 million adults. Half of them say that they have no idea what the purpose of life is.
Is that
120 to 130?
Can you
absolutely
document that?
Yeah, yeah. In addition to that, that goes along with the fact that we find that now half of all Americans don't know if there is such a thing as God, and if there is, they do not define him or describe him as the God of the scriptures. So you've got a nation of people that are running around. Another thing we find in every survey I do, we ask, what do you consider success in life to be then? And what we find is that 8 out of 10 people say that it's something other than commitment to, relationship with, and obedience to God. So we're running around trying
to
get satisfaction.
We're doomed. I mean, I don't want to depress everybody.
Don't give up the ship yet.
But, you know, in that world and with those facts, there's only one answer, and that's a revival. Mm-hmm. And it's happened before when people got like this. You know, the Great Awakening 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. This is exactly the kind of thing that was going on. People were sleeping around. They were using cocaine. There was all kinds of stuff going on, and they saw their wickedness. One of my favorite scriptures, George, is in Nehemiah. I think it's the first 5 chapters. But Ezra, the priest, came to Jerusalem after they had been released by the Babylonians, and they came back and rebuilt the wall. You remember Nehemiah did this. And as they were rebuilding the wall, they stumbled across the old scrolls with the law, and they read it, and they built a stand. This is scriptural, but it's my words. They built a stand, and Ezra got up on that stand, and he began telling everybody what was in the scrolls and what God wanted and where this all came from. And they saw their wickedness. They saw how far they had drifted from God's plan for them. And they began to weep. They were standing before Ezra, and they began weeping. And they fell on their faces before God and repented. Oh, Lord, where is Ezra today? Mm. Where is the church that will stand up and say, this wickedness is going to damn us all? And we have no future if we don't know who God is and what he expects us to do.
Well, and I think one of the tragedies of American society today that's led us to this point is that the church is not being the church. Those people who have positions of leadership in the church are not leading people in the way that God has called them to lead them. We do surveys regularly with pastors, senior pastors of churches around the country. And one of the things we've discussed, we've found in the research, is that most churches do try to measure whether or not they're successful. But their five measures for success are how many people showed up, how much money did we raise, how many programs do we offer, how many staff people have we hired,
how big a church did we build,
and how much square footage have we built out. And you probably know this from going to pastors' conferences. The phrase is, we are a healthy and growing church, as long as the numbers this weekend are bigger than they were 52 weeks ago.
Without overstating the case, I had the opportunity to go to Israel recently with 27 religious leaders and their spouses. And those people that were invited to go are ministers who are getting it done. So we can't paint them all with a broad brush, because there are great churches out there that are preaching the word and are talking about repentance and changing and contrition and realizing that we stand before an awesome God. It's not a lost cause. There are still places where the church is doing what the church is supposed to do.
Well, and we have to remember, too, that when God does great things, he never waits till he has a majority. He always uses a remnant. So,
and it usually breaks out of the institutional container, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think it's hopeless, but we do have to have renewal both within the church and outside the church to get back to God's ways and his principles.
George, we're nearly out of time for this program. This warrants another one, but we didn't get to the bottom of your 10 lists.
On the first slide.
Read them again.
Okay.
Improving the economy.
Starts out with the economy, then health care. Government spending was third. The threat from North Korea was fourth. Terrorism is the fifth most important issue to most Americans. The sixth thing was dealing with congressional gridlock. Seventh on the list was handling the racial tensions and prejudices that are evident in America today. Eighth was immigration. And then number nine was abortion policy.
Ninth place.
Ninth.
It's hardly made a blip.
It's on the radar, but it's on the edges.
And number 10.
Was Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah. We've got to talk more. This is so significant, George. Thank you for coming and being with us. My heart bleeds, literally, for my country. I love my country. I love the American people. And I love the heritage that we have that's come down to us from the founding fathers. We're forgetting it rapidly. and maybe a revival is out there someplace. That's what we need to be praying about. Thank you, George.
We'll
pick it up tomorrow.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the first part of an interview Dr. Dobson conducted with George Barna here on Family Talk. If you missed any part of this conversation and would like to hear it in its entirety, you can go to our website at drjamesdobson.org. Once you're there, you can listen to today's program, plus any other shows that you may have missed in the past. Again, go to our website at drjamesdobson.org and click on the Broadcast tab at the top of the page. We appreciate you joining us for today's broadcast. I'm Jim Valdeis, inviting you to join us again tomorrow for part two of Dr. Dobson's interview with researcher and author George Barna. Have a great day, everyone. Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.